Greetings, everybody out there in dreamland. This is Rumors of Instinct. Namaste and shalom, and welcome to the Rumors of Instinct podcast. Thank you all very much for tuning in and listening. Deeply and sincerely appreciate every single one of you, new and old listeners. If this is your first time, hit me up and follow my account, my official account on Instagram, at Rumors of Instinct. If you want to search me on social media, I have a Facebook group, the Rumors of Instinct podcast, YouTube channel, the Rumors of Instinct podcast, which has a lot of archived videos, and is also where I upload my video productions, previews, etc. for the podcast. I am committed more now to this podcast and this platform, this medium. Than I am any other, so you have found basically the headquarters, the capital, if you were, of the Rumors of Instinct brand and channel, the digital entertainment channel, focusing on conspiracy theories, alternative, independent intellectual discussion, basically uncensored freedom of thought, and all its different versions available to the common person. Both, esoteric and profane, as well as a stage for independent creators, thinkers, alternatives, counterculturalists of all kinds, the plethora of different radicalized critical thinkers in the society of conformists. And Capo Censors. So basically, if you are hoping to contact me, a good place to start would be the Instagram and my DMs, as well as a good place to find all my links would be there as well, because I have my link tree posted, as well as I give updates and daily content uploads and the version of memes and everything to help connect with you guys and communicate with you as a community. So that's where I'm going to be giving back a lot and contributing a lot in social media. Everything else is kind of a mirror towards that. My Facebook and my Twitter, for example. Definitely I'm trying to reach out to as many platforms as possible. So if you have a suggestion to get on board with, let me know in the DMs of my Instagram account. Remember, that's at Rumors of Instinct. You can always search the Rumors of Instinct podcast, and it brings up a number of, the best links to find me on the first page. So thank you all very much. This is another episode of the news, the North, East, West, South news. Once again, if you are tuning in to another installment of this, I deeply appreciate you. Remember, this is my passion project where I speak about matters that are intimately important to me, which I feel should be headline news, and I am going to do my best to make it so, even though that means having to make my own news and put it on the headline, right? So this week, because I try to do a weekly episode of it, I caught myself little overextended and caught up on a little bit of media, right? Because being in the mood of that, so caught the new episodes of Pacific Rim Black and ended up watching all of that. Now, I know it's a new release. I know I have covered the Pacific Rim series before. And for those of you who have been lucky enough to hear me speak about it, I've even crafted original scripts, rewrites, and reimaginations, revisionings of the Pacific Rim movies into a workable, to-scale, very, what I think is a genuinely good and respectful take on the world that they built, the sci-fi universe that they've crafted, as well as addressing the themes consistently, in ever more mature ways throughout the sequels, right? What we have gotten, and I've not been shy about this either, in my reviews of the film or the universe, is that a very solid, right, but kind of flawed. Of course, everything is flawed when you break it down, you know, so scientifically as to be in like under a microscope. But, you know, a film that is incredibly enjoyable and a world that is incredibly rich in possibilities and absolutely gorgeous, exciting, thrilling, captivating, you know, enthralling, just a great science fiction debut and effort for Guillermo del Toro, a sci-fi action film. And the film franchise in this timeline, actually, I think it's very telling that we lived in a decade of extreme disappointment and permanent immaturity. They were making films basically for teenage audiences and treating teenagers like they were little children. Now, that's a dangerous combination because they were trying to do two things that are incompatible with each other, which is cater to an adult sensibility or an ever more naive, but an ever more increasingly excitable adult, you know, maturation process, an adolescent perspective, but also to kind of bridge the gap to create a level of tension and drama that children could understand, thus selling these characters as if they were the Power Rangers, etc. You know, like a cast of adventurers meant for children specifically. This created the terrible, terrible film. One of the worst films the last decade, Pacific Rim Uprising. Pacific Rim Uprising, absolute crap. Crap, garbage, trash film. It is a failure on all cylinders and a waste of time, both for the viewing effort it takes to watch it, and as the studio found out, the cost and it took to make it. All it did was basically kill the hopes of creating any more major motion picture releases of the Pacific Rim universe, right? It was absolutely botched, and really, I mean, obviously just misunderstood by the studios as to what made it great. It wasn't just the beat-em-up, you know, live-action robot fights with you know, monsters, big monsters, kaiju, but it was the seriousness of the situation, as well as the maturity of the characters, like the kind of vulnerability as well as the strength through adversity. You know, the line, "We are canceling the apocalypse," both shows how empowering the film truly is and how, in a sense, desperate and dangerous, you know, dangerous in the fatal sense of the word, that this whole franchise and universe is built onto. I think that the understanding of the characters was extremely flawed in their internal motivations as well as their personification, even by the actors themselves. Charlie Day, for example, I give a lot of credit for in the first film as pulling off a solid character actor performance in the role of Newt, the scientist, the kaiju fan scientist, in his pursuit of the radical solution to an impossible problem. Now, in many ways, he is kind of like a main central character, a hero of the second and third acts, kind of. You know, a hero of the second act, basically. And in the film, he is seen basically in the lowest dregs of society that has to survive during these attacks. So he kind of has his own character growth and arc where he toughens up and becomes more dominant of a figure because he's kind of tested, and he goes through this symbolic underworld experience where he goes into like a refugee bunker. And they exile him, they kick him out because, you know, to save their own lives. And he still tries to save humanity. You know, and at that point is completely lost in the sequel. For example, when he becomes like a tech CEO, douchebag traitor, species traitor, and he's like a kaiju cultist, and he's basically fornicating with a piece of kaiju brain. It takes what is ultimately a lighthearted but very serious, you know, centrally and core-wise, very serious character in a very serious situation, like Newt, and makes them jokes, makes them the punchlines of jokes, makes them try to be clowns for the sake of a very young audience in the way they understand it. Like, oh, he likes kaiju, so that must mean he likes them sexually, or he treats it romantically. Or he's, rich now, so that must mean he's changed from who he is, you know, type thing. Like, it's absolutely atrocious what they did to the franchise, what they did to the universe. Now, for years, because the first one came out in 2013, for years people were clamoring for more installments, more works inside this official canon. And they have now been kind of answered again. 4 years after, 4 years, whatever, after the disastrous sequel, in the form of an anime made for Netflix, so a Netflix original animation, called Pacific Rim Black. Now, I had heard very little about this, except the fact that it existed, and that it was going to be an anime. I had seen maybe the trailer, and a few reviews, by Mr. H, right, and to be honest, I try to take everything he says with a grain of salt. I understand it's an industry. He's a good professional host of it. You know, he does his own part, but we do disagree opinion-wise. You know, so I typically take him for a good, front-page type channel where he tells me what's going on, and then I kind of watch it for myself, but use him as like a soft guide for it, right? And he kind of reacted negatively, you know, and so I was like, okay, this is, 50-50, basically, right? He could just not get it, which is a possible. Or he could have, really seen, scouted ahead and seen some kind of issues. Well, my hat's off to Mr. H. I absolutely got to say, this guy's got a good eye on what's going to suck. And he called this one out on exactly what it was going to be. A suckfest. Basically a very mediocre, kind of bland, very boring actually in many places. But at the same time, adult animation. So basically the worst of both worlds, which is a boring animation that's overly serious, but is also geared for immature people, so there's no real mature themes going on. It's not heavy metal, you know? The stars are up. Very beautiful above us. I'm actually recording this just around 8 o'clock at night, so that means 8:20, and that means that the stars have been out for about an hour. There was partial cloud cover, but it seems to have kind of blown off. And then that Navy plane buzzed us. That's always a good sign. Means they are listening, so at least I got an audience of one. And that is the U.S. Navy Signal Intelligence. the ScanNet, or ScanInt. You know, signals, codes, analytics, intelligence. So basically, the different types of your myriad intelligence gathering methods, electronic programs, black project things, basically your Cold War leftovers, your espionage leftovers, as employed by the U.S. Navy so expertly. So basically, let's go on. If you hear a couple of planes flying by, they love to do that. They love to basically buzz me as I'm giving off my podcast. They fly literally 100 feet above my house. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, basically, Pacific Rim Black is the worst of both worlds. It's animation, but it's not done very good, like very well. It's not it's done obviously better than I could do it, and it has its own unique charm, its cel-shading charm. But compared to the counter criticism that I'm going to make, the thing I'm going to analyze in its place as a positive, I'm going to hold it against the standard of Aeon Flux. You know, I'm just going to be like, hey, the best adult animation that I remember watching and I grew up with from the age of single digits as a child watching it on MTV to through my teenage years into college, into the Navy. I am an honorably discharged disabled Navy veteran. You know, for those of you who don't know, now you know. And after the Navy, because I remember the last time I watched Aeon Flux was a weekend binge session where I watched it multiple times with my girlfriend, Kayla, around 2016, because I watched it, I remember watching Suicide Squad quite, like back-to-back after that. And Aeon Flux, even back then in 2016, was more mature and well-executed than the many of the animes that were coming out at the time. So, nothing has changed, right? The Netflix animations are falling short of animes or adult animations like Aeon Flux that were produced by Western audiences, or produced by Western creators for Western audiences 25 years ago. And, you know, I could easily use Heavy Metal as another counter example for Pacific Rim Black, in that Heavy Metal was an animation made for adults, itself being made, I believe, in the 80s, 85, or, I may be mistaken about that, let me look it up, but I believe 85. Metal Hurlant, as it's called in France, or anything from 2000 AD, you know, like, that is, like you said, a lost art form. And it seems to be by choice. Because we have the traditions, like Aeon Flux and Heavy Metal, for really good 1981. Ooh. I was in the 80s zone, but I was off by 4 years. You know, which is the same saying that Pacific Rim Uprising might as well have come out in 2021 as well as 2017. Because, you know, what's 4 years really in the whole thing? But 81 is actually even better for my cause because it's 39 years old. And it achieves a state of maturity of gravity, of seriousness. Yes, excitement. Yes, titillation. Yes, provocative, vignettes in its anthology. But Pacific Rim Black achieves none of that. It doesn't even get close. It doesn't try. There's no sexual scenes. There's no extreme amounts of violence. There is no radical meaning or moral lesson to be achieved. It's not overtly nihilistic. It's not overtly spiritual or radical or controversial in any way. It doesn't test any limits. It doesn't push any frontiers. You know, it doesn't explore any possible, you know, point or possible front line to be considered really adult animation at all. It is exactly. It's just not fun. It's just not very boring. And, yeah, a lot of people are saying, well, it shows great potential, and that's why it's adult, because it's not supposed to be, you know, your immediate, gratification type thing. It's supposed to be, like, a thinking person's Pacific Rim. You know, more on the themes of Pacific Rim, the possibilities of the universe. And really, with 7 episodes, each being about 30 minutes long, it has a lot of chance to shine. You know, if it was a slow burn in the first couple episodes, I understand. And then the last episode, it's really delved into the possibilities of the genre, really let itself stretch out and explore. That would be one thing, right? We'd be talking about it, we'd have to be having a different conversation. And it seems to be just kind of a cop-out, just kind of another cash grab from a well-received original movie and a largely
largely welcomed intellectual property or intellectual universe, you know, creative universe, the Pacific Rim kaiju invasion universe, you know. We want to watch it as fans. We want to see it as people who appreciate science fiction, who appreciate action science fiction, who appreciate the soft disclosure that this provides, as well as the entertainment value that it has, just simply for the entertainment. Pacific Rim Black absolutely fails at that. And for that, I cannot recommend it. I absolutely do not say spend your time doing it or anything. Watch the reviews. Maybe find compilations of the kaiju fights or the but really, at this point, we just gotta have abandoned ship. This is not a universe that's going to deliver. This is not something that anyone really cares to make. It's a profitable third party that studios like Legendary can use to pad out their production quotas and kind of pad out their studios with, but don't really seem very invested in. Not as heavily invested as, say, for example, the Monsterverse, the Legendary Monsterverse, the Godzilla vs. Kong, for example. But even then, I kind of think that this was a serious attempt at producing an adult animation for a Western audience, right, which is my original criticism of it, that it fails to do so, and fails to live up to its expectations, its traditional expectations, and its kind of heritage, and the realm of Western adult animation. But it does so in type of way that it's maybe restrained by society, maybe restrained by what they think is the standard to which they are going to be held, like the bar, right? Where they might show that a kaiju has killed everyone inside a settlement. But in hindsight, to a real expert, to someone who's experienced in the world of animation and sci-fi action animation, that is nowhere near as serious or as graphic as things like Revenge or Attack on Titan or even. I'm kind of drawing too many examples, so we're going to focus on Aeon Flux. This is more of like a love letter to Aeon Flux because it's worth my time more to explain why I love the Aeon Flux series than the Pacific Rim Black series, right? And so, I'm just kind of pulling up the Aeon Flux bio here. So, and to take that for what it is, right? That I, in watching this new version, this 2021 anime, can only imagine and remember the 1995 Aeon Flux. Can only remember the 1981 Heavy Metal. The films that I grew up with. Right, that were adult animation, that were go-tos at parties, or that which were things I watched on my own, you know, in private, just simply to be inspired by as a young creative, as a young animator, and as a young writer. And even very recently, this past decade, as a connoisseur and as a real fan of adult animation and adult-themed serious, like, you know, themed action, sci-fi action, you know, films in any kind of sense, shows, whatever, right? Okay, so Aeon Flux is created by Peter Chung, right? Or Peter Chung, sorry. Peter Chung. And he himself did not want this to be a full television show. He wanted it to be experimental shorts. Very short, like 3-minute long shorts that would be shown in a variety show called Liquid TV. They were more so to be counterculture in itself, something that Pacific Rim completely lacks. Any real effort at being counterculture, any real effort at being critical of society, right? Liquid Television wasn't so much that, but it was very edgy in the ways that it was pushing the limits of a very liberal broadcast channel, MTV, in the 90s, right? MTV was giving them free license. It did prove to be the most popular segment in Liquid TV. Thus, it was inevitable that they ran a limited 16-episode, three-season Aeon Flux show with longer format, a regular format, 30-minute episodes, and a structure very, you know, similar to your standards, right? But that was really where the similarities to anything normal ended. Aeon Flux is a set in a surreal German expressionist style futuristic universe in the year 7698 AD. Aeon Flux comprised a bizarre post-apocalyptic dystopian world of barren wastelands, mutant creatures, clones, and robots within the last two bordered walled cities of Monica and Bregna, similar to the Berlin Wall. Somewhere in formerly Eastern Europe, after the environmental catastrophe that wiped out 99% of the global population, the title character is a tall, sexy, dominatrix, scantily clad secret agent from the Society of Monica, skilled in espionage, assassination, and acrobatics. Her mission is to infiltrate the strongholds of the neighboring country of Brigna, which is led by her sworn enemy and sometimes lover, Trevor Goodchild, the technocratic dictator of Brigna. The two sister cities engage in a futile, never-ending war for ideological supremacy, while Monica represents a dynamic, nihilistic, anarchist society where rules don't exist. Brigna embodies a centralized, scientifically planned Orwellian police state. The names of their respective characters reflect this. Flux is the self-directed agent from Monica, and Goodchild is the self-appointed leader of Brigna. And they basically have a very close love-hate relationship. The term Aeon comes from the Gnostic notion of eons as emanations of the god, who come from male-female pairings, here Flux and Goodchild. This juxtaposition also maps accordingly to the characterizations of Eris and Greyface in the Discordian mythos. Further mythical parallels can be drawn in likening Goodchild to Apollo and Flux to Artemis. So you have religious, classical religious themes, you have alternative, kind of obscure, but really kind of cool and edgy religious beliefs that were coming into the mainstream through media like this, such as Gnostic thought, which would also be in The Matrix, which would also be in The Invisibles, which were late 90s graphic novels and, you know, feature-length science fiction action film, right? So Aeon Flux in many ways inspired The Matrix in many, many ways. But Aeon Flux came out about 5 or 4 years before The Matrix. It was filmed in it was animated in 1995 and released in 1995, right, for the most part. So I think it was between 93 and 95 that Aeon Flux really kind of was, you know, new, right? Within that little description, though, it's hard to get across the sheer physicality that the animation brought to it. This could not and should not exist in any other medium besides adult animation. One, the scale is incredible. With animation, it's possible to really, like, create casts of hundreds of disposable extras that serve as cannon fodder. It's also possible to kill off the main cast, you know, repeatedly to show the nihilism and the violence of espionage and war. It's able to show aliens, high technology, everything from experimental fetishistic sex to just bizarre, cerulean, Mobius-inspired landscapes of the incredible far future. This is all affordable and able to be kept within the direction of a singular visionary, Peter Chung, right? Through animation. The animation is not a hindrance. It is a augmentation of the storytelling you know, scripting the devices. Many of the ANFlex episodes do not have any scripted dialogue, for example. It's entirely visual. It's entirely visual medium. Many of them are incredibly fast-paced, singular, kind of alternate dimension, alternate timelines, stories. The series itself creates a lot of lore and myth-building around the surrounding characters, especially Goodchild, Trevor Goodchild, including the existence of a plague, the existence of the ecological disaster that took over the world, the existence of aliens, of biological organisms, of AI, of, you know, the police state that they exist in, the security wall, the Monikans, the clones, the clone technology that they use. For Aeon Flux is a clone. She has hundreds of copies of herself, right? There is so everything from Gnostic religious symbolism in Jordowski from the Holy Mountain type of symbolism. So this animation, which only lasted for 3 seasons, and for 2 of those seasons was limited to 2 to 3 minute long short episodes, was able to both show adults not only what was expected of this adult situation, such as war, espionage, violence, assassination, mortality, violence, you know, everything like that, but also show what was, you know, strictly in the realm of the imaginary or strictly in the realm of the visionary, including, you know, the biological entities, the strange fetishism, the sexuality, the religious angle of it, you know, basically everything from the design of the characters, which itself is very Scorpion inspired, very gymnastic, very, very sexualized. You know, the way the weapons fire, it feels very kinetic, it feels very real. There are scenes, for example, where Aeon Flux is shot straight in the face, where she falls to her death, where she is betrayed and left for dead in a sinking oil rig by her, by a double-crossing, you know, agent. You name it, the amount of violence that befalls the characters and they act on others is only possible in animation, because if it was live action, it would be deemed too extreme. It would be deemed too violent, you know? So, same thing with Heavy Metal. That if this was a film, it would run into too much censorship. So animation is really the only and the safest way to do it, because animation is, in some aspects, still free and accessible by younger audiences as well as adult audiences. The kind of difficulty there is making sure mature and adult audiences watch these animations, because it does get kind of like a bad reputation, such as from bad showings and entries like Pacific Rim Black. The inspiration that I've always gotten from Aeon Flux is that when you watch it, every scene has something to learn, like something to teach. And you can learn something from every episode and from every scene about the world that they live in, the greater world they live in, and it builds up off each other. I don't get that from Pacific Rim Black. In many ways, after watching the show, I kind of feel like it's an alternate timeline of Pacific Rim. It doesn't seem canonically like it follows the events of the first Pacific Rim, and I don't believe it canonically follows the events of the second Pacific Rim. In many ways, it is an outlier on both, where it's very tangentially related, but at the same time uses the same core principles. Like, I understand not wanting to kind of follow in the footsteps of Uprising because it's such a bad film, but instead of just simply taking, like throwing that away and not using it and kind of being the intended sequel in spirit for a masterpiece, the first one, and in lack of a better word, or at least a masterpiece when compared to Pacific Rim Uprising and Pacific Rim, the first film, it simply kind of throws both away. And it seems to kind of invent a world where, you know, spoilers, the kaiju have completely invaded and are on their way of taking over our world and have even begun making human kaiju hybrids to kind of be, and I think at the end it even says the kaiju messiah. And I you see, there is promise, there is hope there. And I think that's a good way to say it. Pacific Rim Black has a lot of possibility, it has a lot of promise. But its execution is so boring, and it's so dull, and it's so tame, that to think of these things, it's impossible not to be disappointed. You know, like, Aeon Flux was able to talk about Gnostic twin flames and, like, the internal God spirit of the soul, dystopias, the extinction of mankind through its own playing of God. It showed extreme amounts of upfront violence and embodied the nihilism of a world at war, even when there were only two societies left on Earth, 99% of the population having been killed off already, that there would still be nothing but a state of total war between them. It showed sexuality between adults, men and women. Now, you can say that that's patriarchal and exploitative or whatever, but that's reality. That is intensely central and fundamental to what we know as adult. And if we are going to call Pacific Rim Black adult, we need to accept the fact that nothing adult really happens between the characters. Yes, they are survivors of violence. Yes, they kind of understand guilt and things like that, but there's no real passion, there's no real romance, there's no real life issues such as, you know, fertility or, like I said, eroticism or empowerment in the human experience. We see these things only from an outsider perspective. We never get to see their internal psychological states really ever explored. And when they are explored, like when it's obvious that they're emoting, when it's obvious how they're handling situations, is it never really subverting expectation or defying expectation? Thus, I don't think it really can qualify as adult animation. The only things that really make it qualify as adult animation are its pacing and its pedigree as being a Pacific Rim story. You know, like, yes, you wouldn't want an adolescent to watch, say, for example, Copperhead destroy the settlement because of the bummer there, but you also really wouldn't want anyone immature watching Aeon Flux because, you know, the whole thing is nightmare fuel, basically. Much like you wouldn't let them watch Full Metal Jacket. You know, like, other possibly X-rated, extremely hard R-rated adult entertainments. Exactly. Like, you wouldn't let them watch Eyes Wide Shut, which is in itself adult, you know? Like, that's the whole point of it being adult. Give a quick review for the Pacific Rim storyline, for example. In 7 episodes, okay, the Australian continent is overrun by powerful monsters called kaiju. Siblings Taylor and Haley Travis left behind while their parents leave to find help in the Jaeger. Right, so their parents are Jaeger pilots. 5 years later, the survivors have built a self-sustaining community in the desert. Haley accidentally finds a training Jaeger, but when she powers it up, it attracts a huge red-veined kaiju codenamed Copperhead, which destroys the settlement, killing all its occupants. Right? So because of her actions, everyone has died. So she has that remorse and guilt. Taylor and Haley gradually learn how to pilot the Jaeger. But like Rey, you know, Skywalker, the Rey in Star Wars, her guilt is only a means to an end. It's to inspire her to become strong. So Atlas is joined with the aid of its onboard AI computer, Loa. They leave the settlement. So, exactly, they have an onboard AI, which was never, ever established in the Pacific Rim universe. In fact, automation in the form of the drones was seen as a plot by the Kaiju and the Kaiju cultists to destroy mankind. So, right, they're just going to throw out everything that they traditionally held inside the universe. They reach Meridian City, but the Jaeger's power cells are depleted. While searching on foot for new power cells, they are attacked by a small Kaiju, basically two dogs, some of which are caught and eaten by a towering monster which resembles a cross between a Kaiju and a Jaeger. While there, they encounter a young blue-haired boy with the mind of a child encased in chamber fluid, who they decide to take him with them. Taylor, Hilly, and the boy see four other humans in the distance near a river who appears to be gathering Kaiju eggs. The boy runs towards them, but he is detected by an amphibious Kaiju which leaves the water. It attacks and eats two of the egg snatchers before the others destroy it with a rocket-propelled grenade. The survivors, Richter and May, take Taylor, Hilly, and the boy to their mobile camp called Bogan. The leader, Shane, trades Kaiju eggs with Furno seen for Jaeger parts. Furno then trades the eggs to a group called the Sisters who live on the hills. Shane questions the Taylor using a modified neural bridge to extract his memories, which includes the existence and location of their Jaeger. So Taylor awakens to find the Bogan camp on its way to Meridian to retrieve Atlas Destroyer. They use a power cell to restart Atlas, and their technician, Joel, tries to partner with members of the Bogan who do not have a drift training. But they all fail. Meanwhile, the Jaeger's energy patterns alerts Copperhead, which heads in that direction. Shane orders Taylor to co-pilot the Atlas with May. Their synchronization is complete, and when May tries to fight the Kaiju, it removes and eats the right arm of the Jaeger. Taylor and May run Atlas into a minefield where the spider manages to detonate mines which render the Kaiju unconscious. Shane is angry at the damage caused to Atlas and orders Taylor, Hilly, and the boy to leave. May suspects that Shane plans to kill the Travis group, Taylor, Hilly, and boy, and warns them to leave before sunrise. Shane orders Joel to get the Jaeger operational, but his attempt to mind-meld with the potential Bogan co-pilots damages his brain. Shane sends Richter to kill the Travis group, and during a struggle, he shoots Boy with no apparent effect. May arrives and then kills Richter, then smuggles Taylor back to the Atlas so that he can pilot alone. Yada, yada, yada. So basically, it's a lot more pilot drama, right? A lot of inconsistent pilot lore. So electrified chasms called breaches start occurring, and Atlas begins falling into one. Taylor and Hilly jump on board. Graveyard, but Skeletor remains a different Kaiju, Leatherback, Slatterns, and Mutavores. They are also damaged Jaegers, November Ajax, Valor Omega, Titan Redeemer, and 23 more from the Uprising War. Travis finds Boy near another breach, but a Category 3 Acid Quill-type Kaiju emerges from the chasm. It attacks Atlas, but the Kaiju mech from the Meridian, and it keeps going on like that. So basically, I better just keep reading it, right? This is where we're almost at the end. There's 6 episodes into it. The creature named Apex is apparently a clone survivor which has evolved into a single biomech unit. It established a mental connection with Boy and Meridian and established that the Travises are friends of Boy. Apex retrieves a Jaeger arm from the scrap and hands it to Atlas. After Taylor and Hilly install the arm from Mark IV Chaos Nemesis, they discover that it contains a vanadium steel saber chain. Apex begins feeding on the dead Kaiju while Boy rejoins Taylor and Hilly. And then the last episode, which is just absolute crap. Taylor presses Loa for more information about the Uprising War. Loa detects signals from the unknown Jaeger about Clayton City, so they take Atlas there. When they arrive, they find May, and it all takes some time to relax together at a cafe. However, May recalls unhappy events there when she first met Shane, and her mood changes. While exploring, the Travis finds the wreck of the Hunter, their parents' Jaeger. They enter the hatch and access the last messages left by their parents, Rangers Ford and Brenna. Travis, as they were being attacked by Kaiju. The youngsters leave, but find that a Copperhead Kaiju has attacked and toppled Atlas, then it attacks them, injuring Hilly. Taylor and May enter the Atlas while Boy stays to protect Hilly. As the Kaiju charges, Boy transforms into a huge blue-veined humanoid and attacks Copperhead, but gets buried under tons of rubble. Atlas arrives and uses its saber chain to attack and injure the Copperhead. Meanwhile, Hilly has unjammed a nuclear missile in Hunter and fires it at the Copperhead, destroying it completely. She returns to the kaiju boy, who is still trapped but alive. On the rooftops above, a group of sisters appear and declare that the kaiju messiah has come. Okay. It is absolutely as mediocre as that is. Visually watching it out is no better. Because it is as lackluster and as wasteful of the runtime as I just made it out to be. It's not particularly well acted. And it has no real particular, very interesting animation to it. It looks very generic as well, by the way. It's an extremely generic looking film. Now, in comparison, right? In comparison, Aeon Flux's first season had this plot line. With this occurring. Oh, and by the way, the season one shorts, the trailers for the short, the 2 or 3 minute long little micro episodes, were first animated in 1991. This is a 29-year-old production, basically. So you got to remember that. It's 29 years old compared to something that came out in 2021. Season 2 is 1992. Season 3, 1995. All right? So it doesn't really get good until season 3, which is an actual show. Actually, I was going to read the Wikipedia of it, and I just saw that it's like a fucking beast. It's pages long because of how much goes on, right? So I'll just read the first episode and the last episode. In this episode, Aeon has, as a number one, called Utopia or Deuteranopia, right? Imagine that being an episode title in fucking Pacific Rim Black. In the episode, Aeon has infiltrated Bregna at a time when Trevor Goodchild has accepted power temporarily from the kidnapped elected President Clavius. Soon, Trevor enacts a policy of complete openness, installing cameras all across Bregna and giving him ultimate control over all the people. But Gildemore, a Breen soldier loyal to Clavius, is plotting against the new chairman, guessing rightly that Trevor was the mastermind behind the kidnapping. Trevor's reasons for the coup are twofold. He gains ultimate power in Bregna and uses Clavius' body to create an isolated place locked with a strange ornate key where he can keep Aeon for good, keeping her to himself in perfect privacy. Aeon, for her own reasons, allies with Gildemore and finds her way into Clavius, confronting Trevor and leading Gildemore to his leader, allowing him to free Clavius from Trevor's captivity. However, Clavius is revealed to be completely insane and Gildemore is forced to kill him. He and Aeon then fight, and she easily overpowers him. Trevor finds them both near the walled frontier, and Gildemore condemns Trevor as a traitor. But Aeon uses the key to Clavius to unlock her own underwear and provoke the other soldiers into showing duplicate keys, apparently discrediting Clademore's claims and opening the way for Trevor to cement his power. But Trevor's wish to keep Aeon to himself is not granted, since Aeon prepared her escape route beforehand, and though she returns the key to Trevor, flees across the frontier to Monica, her country. That's 30 minutes of an episode. The first episode, by the way. Which is going to set up their entire universe, right? Just think about how complex that was. Think about how many moving parts there was. Visually, it is a tour de force of mind-bending experimental animation, incredible cinematic pacing, violence, political espionage and intrigue, fetishistic, you know, BDSM style imagery, you know, the works, versus a very cliche and stale CGI rendering of kaiju, which are actually less intimidating and less physically, you know, frightening or powerful than the original kaiju in the 2013 film. Now, there are 10 episodes in this season,
So the last one, right? And they all kind of are sequential in order, progressively including more of the lore and the backstory of the world they live in, this nihilistic Orwellian hellscape. Trevor has denied a satellite, Aldous B, which will help, or has designed a satellite, Aldous B, which will help speed up their evolution of humanity, but could also kill off half the living population of the Earth. Eon, determined to stop Trevor from using the satellite, steals and buries the remote. But avoiding the search party, she finds a hibernating pod holding a strange alien with removable eyes, psionic abilities, and no breathing, eating, or genitals. The alien is captured by one of the search parties, but saves Eon when the captor throws a firebomb. Trevor examines the alien and sees the signs of exposure to Aldous B. He heads off to find the alien ship, but the alien escapes and follows him, finding both him and the Eon at the ship. Aldous B has killed off everyone on the ship, leaving only the alien, who had been waiting rescue in its pod. Eon and Trevor make love in the ship while the alien watches. The next day, the alien finds Eon and offers her one of its own eyes, but Eon refuses. Then Eon offers to show the alien human sexual pleasure. The alien, either frightened or revolted by the idea, leaves and is captured by Breen soldiers. The alien and Trevor, after getting better acquainted, head in a special shuttle to the alien's amazing homeworld, while Eon decides to await his return in the hibernation pod. While Trevor learns the alien's psionic skills, Eon sleeps through hundreds, maybe thousands, of years. Waking, she finds a strange hive-like city has taken the place of Monica and Brigna, with the entire population being the alien species. Enraged, and finding Trevor trying to fit in, Eon finds the remote for Aldous B and fires it. Trevor, who now has the alien's full telepathic power, tells her that the aliens are what humanity will become, and that Eon has done what he was about to do in their original timeline, killed off most of the human race. Eon angrily knocks out Trevor and puts him in the hibernation pod, then travels back into the city and sees the surviving or sickened aliens boarding their ship. Realizing her folly, Eon returns to Trevor and enters hibernation with him. The pod is picked up by the departing ship, and Trevor's voice is heard saying, "Go forth and multiply," which is the commandment of God, you know, in the Old Testament in Genesis, and thus kind of in the last season he's basically the humanistic version of his own God. He's the demiurge incarnate. This kind of betray you messiah, a false messiah figure, right? And Eon Flux being Hecate, Eris, the goddess of chaos in the Discordian literature, or the ancient Chthonic mysteries, the ancient mysteries of, you know, Greek mythology and everything. So basically, it's night and day. I mean, this is adult animation. This is adult storytelling. Right, you have aliens, you have sexuality, you have the extinction of the human race, you have nihilism, you have ethical dilemmas, you have guilt, you have mistaken characters who are both flawed at the same time empowered. They are deeply connected and at the same time human and express fundamentally human nature, such as the needs for romance, the needs for control, as well as flawed and fallible, right? And ultimately the enemies are not each other, it's their own flaws, it's their own obsessions, it's their own worldview. And that, I think, ultimately is what's lacking from Pacific Rim Black, is that the characters are morally justified from start to finish in their limited run of episodes, and never is that called to question whether or not they are on the right side or on the wrong side of this world that they have lived in or existed in or are helping to create. Much like how Marvel movies lack any kind of serious cinematic philosophy, because the characters are immediately designated as good and evil, thus basically fulfilling or predetermining all situations, you know, to follow
from the beginning of the movie, that's how you can tell the ending of the film. Same thing with Pacific Rim Black. From the beginning of Pacific Rim Black, you know how it's going to end, and that is this final showdown with the original evil of that they encounter that spurs them on their hero's journey, if you can call such a limited amount of growth and evolution of a character, let alone two characters, such, which is, to put it very generously, a character arc of the Travises. You get the other sense, though, in Aeon Flux, is that the adult animation aspect of it, the adult aspect of it, is the embracing of these characters both as avatars of very, you know, controversial, explorations in, you know, very mind-blowing, you know, eye-opening philosophies and realities, such as political espionage, such as the Gnostic philosophy, such as the concept of aliens, such as the concept of human evolution, you know, the empowerment of liberation of human sexuality, for example. That is what not only defines Aeon Flux as adult animation, but the purpose of Aeon Flux as adult animation. And whereas it has a purpose, it has a mission in each episode to kind of put forth these themes. Its objectives are to test you, to mature you as an audience, so that even while adults can watch this, they can still be tested. And while adolescents can watch it, you know, sneakily, you know, to kind of dip their feet first into the waters of real life, it will help mature them. It will help inspire them for the future, for the greater labyrinthian realities, the world of difficult truths awaiting them in adulthood. Pacific Rim Black is intended for an older audience, but ultimately falls to trying to sugarcoat everything and simply deliver more material for an intellectual universe instead of pushing its edges, instead of exploring its frontiers, instead of really bringing a sense of seriousness and humanity to the characters within that universe. The situation within the universe, because it already started as a very serious universe. Now it seems to have lost its gravity, lost its importance, has lost any meaning to even exist. And while trying to create newness, actually reduces everything to pointlessness. And chooses the wrong thing to try to continue, which is the uprising version of Pacific Rim, rather than the right choice, which is the mature adult Pacific Rim original by Guillermo del Toro. Sorry. And they fail at every aspect of that, every aspect of the adult animation industry and the world and genre. So do yourself a favor, skip Pacific Rim Black, watch Aeon Flux, watch Heavy Metal, specifically watch Aeon Flux. See adult animation for how it's supposed to be. See Western animation for how it's supposed to be. See Western animation made by Westerners for Westerners. Made by adults for adults. This has been Rumors of Instinct Podcast. This has been Rumors of Instinct, sorry, with the Rumors of Instinct Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. As always, I greatly appreciate, sincerely appreciate every single one of you listeners, new and old. If you haven't already, follow my Instagram account at the Rumors of Instinct. It's the Rumors of Instinct Instagram channel. Check out my YouTube, the Rumors of Instinct podcast. Check me out online, all my different social medias. Follow the link tree for links directly to different podcast platforms and hosts. It's free, so thank you all very much. You can feel free to check out the archive and the portfolio of the different episodes I made. Iron sharpens iron. A friend sharpens a friend. Consider supporting me any way you can, even sharing it online with you, with your friends and your family. Thank you all very much.
Namaste and shalom. Iron sharpens iron. A friend sharpens a friend. This has been Rumors of Instinct. God bless you and your families. Peace out.